What a great song that is. I love that, just that our hearts would be consecrated to you. And we just thank you that your heart is for the world. And we just want to lift up this message for you today. These slides I'm going to be sharing on Indonesia, up to you today too. And just pray it's not us trying to glorify ourselves, but that we're ultimately trying to glorify you and pull out some principles that apply to each and every one of us every day. And it's so hard for us that we can sing these songs of consecrating our hearts, but yet applying the simple truth sometimes are difficult. And we just ask you to help us and to guide us and to direct us and just direct my words and my speech and just allow you to speak through me today as I come to speak about Abraham and your heart for missions and sharing. In your name we pray. Amen. I titled this message today, God's Greater Plan. And it was really kind of neat hearing from Clara this morning. She was talking about going to the Korea. And I really encourage anybody, if you have a chance, especially when I was in high school, I graduated out of high school and I headed to Brazil for almost a year. And people were wondering, you're not going to college? I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I went to high school. And it was amazing. I wasn't saved at the time. But I really learned a lot about myself, a lot about other cultures, and a lot of it I didn't even learn about until actually I got back home. And after Diane and I got saved, and it was several years after we got saved, we started having Brazilians live with us. We had a couple, two or three Brazilians move in with us. And we started later taking teams on some short-term missions. And that was clear back in about 86, 87, sometime. I remember a long time ago, it was on Cloverdale Road. The Lord got a hold of our hearts. And Diane said, you ever thought about going to the mission field? And I had thought, yeah, I've thought about that, but I thought you would never ever think about that. And I thought, I can't believe you're saying that. I remember stopping the car and pulling over and said, I can't believe it. And that was about 86, 87. I remember later meeting with David Roper and a team of people over at Cole Christian Church at the time. And I remember Dave just kind of laughing at us because I said we were on a 10-year plan to get to the mission field. And he said, man, we hope we can get you there faster than that. And, well, it did take about 10 years. So I really encourage anybody who's young like Clara, it is a good thing. If you get into missions, there's so much, it goes by so fast. By the time you get training, by the time you go to the field, by the time you get settled, and then there's challenges. And that's really what I want to talk about today, is the challenges when you go to the mission field. You have all these challenges. You have all these things in your mind. You have these expectations. But it doesn't always turn out that way. But God has a greater plan. So today what I wanted to do is go read from a little bit about Abraham when we get there. But I wanted to just ask people, how many of you here think that God really is a missionary God? Can we see some hands? You guys, how many of you think God is a missionary God? Can you see that in the Old Testament? I see it in the Old Testament. A little bit harder. There are people out there who say you can't see missions in the Old Testament. There's a few, a small group. And I think in our realm, in our theological group, most people would agree that you can see missions and you see God's heart is for the world, even in the Old Testament. How about God's heart for the Gentiles? Can you see that too? I tell you what, there's more verses in the Old Testament about God's heart to the nations and to the Gentiles than there is in all the epistles. Is that interesting? And so it's pretty exciting. So really what I want to do today is I wanted Tim Hedger, about 2 weeks ago, he spoke on Bible interpretation. You do observation, what does it say? And you do interpretation, what does it mean? You do application. I also like to emphasize correlation. A lot of times correlation is buried under interpretation. That's correlating scriptures with scriptures. And today I'm going to be more highlighting precepts and concepts. We're going to be moving a little bit fast, and we're going to be talking about Abraham. I just want to grab a few concepts that about Abraham, because a lot of people consider him to be the first missionary, which I do too. It's pretty interesting that he, when you read his life, but you see the human side of him too, and you see the greater plan that God has. So that's really what I want to be pulling out as a practical application. So really today, I'm not going to be doing so much as observation, interpretation. I'm going to be grabbing some practical application. When Joe asked me to share, he asked me to, why don't you share about your mission and share about what you've been doing and where you're at, and then share from the Word. And so I'm doing a little verse. I'm going to share from the Word because it's going to tie into just some of the theme of what I want to do, of just sharing some of the challenges that we had over the years. A lot of new members here. I just want to let you know kind of what we've done and where we've been and where we're going. There's been phases all along to where we've been. And so let me see if I can get this going and see if it's up there. And so now, since you guys already answered, I about earlier in the week, let's see if this it's not coming on. How come? Do I have to turn this on? Maybe it. Did it go? What did it do? Oh, I think I turned it off. Sorry. I was trying to see if this thing was responding even there. All right, there we go. All right, so the first 14, look how many verses there are. If you guys want to get this from me, I can give it to you on a CD or a USB drive or whatever. There are, just in the three prophets, there are more verses dedicated to foreign nations than those 25 chapters of three major prophets I mentioned already than the whole entire New Testament. So pretty interesting. There's a lot of New Testament verses too. And I'm going really fast, but if we get time, we'll come back. But I'm under short time frame. And God's greatest missionary sent Jesus Christ to us, right? And so, and here's the first missionary I want to talk about is Abraham. So we skipped a bunch of verses, a bunch of slides there, because I know I'm going to run out of time. That's always my downside when I'm preaching. So I'm going to try and go fast here. Let's just read a little bit. I want to spend just a little bit of time in chapter 12 and chapter 13, because we can bring out to the human side a little bit what's going on here. And let me get up, catch up here so I can see it too. Okay, it says in Genesis 12, it says, God's commission to Abraham. Now the Lord had said to Abraham, get out of your country, from your family and from your father's house to a land, and I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And what a great promise there. He just tells him to get up and go. And what does Abraham do? It says in the New Testament that he actually obeyed. And oops, okay, it is turning. I was sitting there looking at my screen, and my screen wasn't turning. Okay, and it says then we see here, it says, then Abraham, he obeyed. He took Sarai, and I keep saying Abraham, so he doesn't get called Abraham until chapter 17. So if I say Abraham, you know who I'm talking about. Same person, but he's called Abram here and Sarai here. And his wife and Lot and his brother's son and all their possessions that they had gathered and people whom they had acquired in Haran. And they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Abraham passed through the land to the place of Shechem as far as the terebinth tree of Moreh. And the Canaanites were there in the land. I kind of find it interesting. They always talk about the Canaanites were in the land. And as you go through all these different passages, that keeps coming up. The terebinth tree keeps coming up. And then it always talks about the Canaanites. But remember when Joshua and Caleb went in, they were fearful of the Canaanites. So I don't know if that was kind of setting up the future story. But it's just like, yeah, we kind of expect it. Maybe we're looking back. I'm looking back and saying, yeah, I expect the Canaanites to be there. But maybe it wasn't quite as obvious. But the other thing here, it says they acquired people whom they acquired. People, actually, the translation is souls. And so a lot of theologians say, hey, it looks like that he was already ministering. We got to remember, he's a monotheistic person who worships one God. The nations around him were polytheistic, which they worshiped many gods. And so there's a lot of pressure on them to stand out and say you're just going to follow one God. And then yet alone to be told that you're going to pack up your possessions and you're going to leave. Now, how many of you guys are willing to do that? You don't have to raise hands. But it is a tough thing. It's a difficult thing for him back then as it is difficult for us today. And yet he obeyed and he packed up and he left. And he actually had people that looked like they were committed to him. Now, Lot, we sit there and say, Lot's not in the book of Hebrews, but he must have been committed to him and he must have saw something in Lot because he took Lot with him. And yet we see some fleshy sides a lot too, some human sides a lot. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And so then there he built an altar to the Lord and who had appeared to him, and he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west of Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called the name of the Lord. So Abraham journeyed going on still toward the south. And then, let's see here. And so there was a famine in the land, it says, and Abraham went down to Egypt. I'm not going to read all the verses. You're going to have to go back. I'm just trying to pull out the applications here. It says, and when he got close to Egypt, guess what they do? Abraham comes up with this suggestion and this scheme. I got this plan. How about We just let them know that you're my sister. It's a half-truth, but it's also a half-lie, right? Because she really was his half-sister, but he was married to Sarai, and so they're going to say, all right, let's just don't tell them who we really are so we can make it easier on ourselves. Well, it kind of works for a little while, and as we see on down, as we go down below, so that's where the human side starts coming in of saying, hey, let me help God out here. Let me do what I can. And so he says, please say you are my sister, he says, and you go on down. It says, the princess of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. He treated Abram well for her sake. And it says he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys and camels. So it's showing that he might have even acquired more than what he had even when he left. So in this time, and it says, but the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Now here's where God's greater plan comes back into effect, right? Because he's saying, hey, that's not my plan. You know, and I even asked myself, why did he go down to Egypt if he was going to go out to Canaan? That's another story, but he went on down and went down there, here he is. And then it says, he treated Abram, and then it says, Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? He says, I might have taken her as my wife. That would have been putting him into sin, it would have been putting Abraham in sin, it would have been parents Sarai into sin. Why would you put yourselves in that kind of position? Can we say that was trusting God? Sometimes I think on the mission field, I think in churches, I think in our own lives, we can try to come up with our own plans that might help God out, right? We think God's not moving fast enough. I know it's happened to Diane and I on the mission field, and I know it probably won't be free from that temptation until we go to glory, correct? And so, then he says, why did you tell me that was your wife? He goes on down, and then he gets almost commissioned again by Pharaoh, by a stranger in another land. He's telling him, he sends him away. And some different versions almost make it sound like that he's being sent away and with his wife and all that he had. And this is kind of a neat thing where God really protected him and blessed him because he didn't take his possessions from him or punish him or throw him into jail or whatever. He just said, you got to get from here. And so God's greater plan is really a beautiful thing when we think about it. And we come to 13, just make sure I'm on the same slide. Then Abraham went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all they had, and Lot with him. And Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and gold, and he went up on a journey, and it says, and he went to the place of the altar where he had been, where we'd already had mentioned, and Abram called on the name of the Lord, and he called on the name of the Lord, and Lot also went with Abram and had flocks and herds and tents. So it looks like he acquired some too, or he had everything he had. Now the land was not able to support them. They had so much. The land wouldn't support right there where they were at. So they come up with an idea, but right before they come up with an idea, guess what's taking place? It says the herdsmen have their strife between the herdsmen. That's kind of interesting. It's always neat how the Bible just puts in the human side of things, isn't it? Where there's people, there's what? Or strife. I think even 1 Timothy 4 talks about that too, about people being strife. Wherever there's organizations, there's what? Anybody been in organizations? There's strife, right? And so wherever there's people involved, there's always going to be strife. And if you're free from strife at your work, free from strife anywhere, then, boy, I want to know how you do it. But Abram goes on, and here it is. He says again, the Canaanites and Perizzites dwelled in the land. I don't know why it brings that up. It just throws it in there, but it's interesting. And then it says, so Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Now here he does a faithful thing. It's, you know, give it to him. He does the right thing. He takes the lead. He sets the example. He's a leader. He's already been the leader. He's already had people following him. And so he takes the initiative and says, because you're my brethren, that's the greater testimony. Let's protect our testimony and do the right thing. It's always not always a wrong thing to separate. And we've seen other examples in the Bible where there's times where individuals have separated from one another. And so that's what they choose to do. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. If you go to the right, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan. I think there, lifted up his eyes. almost reminds me how the Israel picked Saul, right? He lifted up his eyes. This seems like that way. It's more the fleshly thing being drawn out. And that he, it looks like he saw it was the land like the Garden of Eden almost, or the way it was before Sodom and Gomorrah was cursed. And so it must have been very appealing to him, thinking, hey, but we all know how it turned out. There were wicked men in the land, and they end up having to run for their lives. I mean, leave under God's command to leave there in future chapters. And but he, before that happened, no, in the next, in just later down in this chapter, it says there were men that were exceedingly wicked. And it said, it goes on in 13 here. I'm just going ahead and read this verse. It says, and then the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now. Now the Lord's telling him to lift up his eyes. See, it's being directed by God, not Abram saying, hey, this is what I see, this is what I want. Now God's almost, it seems like he's playing on that verse where Lot was looking from a fleshly manner. Go ahead and take a look. Look what I'm going to give you. Look to the north, look to the south, look to the east, look to the west. As far as you can see, that is yours. Is that pretty neat? And so I just want to remind us too. It says, in the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, as that of man could number of the dust of the earth, then descendants also could be numbered. And it says, for I give it to you. And we go on. And one thing I just want to remind us, that there's 170 references in the Bible. It talks about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their offspring being promised the land. And 55 of those, it's given to them as an oath that this is your land. And in 12 of those, it says this is an everlasting covenant. We don't believe that today, do we? A lot of strife going on in the Middle East and around the world, and a real danger with that. But you know what? It's God's land. He is the owner. He's the God Almighty. If he says, this is my land, he can do what he wants with it, correct? Because it's his land. But yet today we have many people, many politicians not agreeing with that. And so that's just a side note as we come up through here. Let me see where we're at here. Genesis 15, 1 through 7. Yep. All right, in Genesis 15, we see basically, again, he says, Abram says to the Lord that... the word of came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward. Abram said, Lord, what will you give me? Seeing I go childless, and heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. So he has Eliezer with him, and he still can't figure out, how is the Lord going to bless me and bless all these nations? I have no kids. And he says, nope, it's not going to be through Eliezer. It's going to be the way I do it. And he says, look, you give me no offspring. And God on down here says, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him saying, this is one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir. Then he brought him outside, look toward the heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. He believed in the Lord and he counted it to him for righteousness. I am the Lord who brought you out. And we see in Romans and Galatians, I wish I had time, but I got to cut part of it out. But he says it was accounted to him for righteousness' sake. Can you read that in Romans 4? You can read in Galatians 2. Not Galatians 2, but you can read in Galatians about him as well. And there's some other passages too that talks about him. But it's what's really neat is here now, he's trying to do it again. He's trying to give God suggestions of how it's going to work out. He's already been promised that the nations are going to come through him. But now he's trying to tell God, okay, God, I believe your promise, but... How about we use Eliezer? No, it's not going to come through Eliezer, is what the Lord says. So in chapter 17, I just want to mention, I'm going to come to 22. But in chapter 17, Abram again reiterates the covenant again of the land and the seed and the blessing. But he details the land out and defines it out more by the borders, by naming the countries and stuff. And so that's one of the other places where it's been reiterated, like I mentioned. And then we come to chapter 22, and that's the part that I want to come up to. Then I want to show you some slides about Diana and just pulls out some principles. In chapter 22 right here, this is really what they talk about, a theophany of Christ in here, because there's so many parallels here, and I'll just pull out a few of them. And it said, let's see, where am I here? Yeah, 22. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested him. Or you could say he examined his heart is what some of the meaning is, that God examined him and tested Abraham. And now he's calling him Abraham because in chapter 17, that's the other thing, he renames him to Sarah, Abraham and Sarah. And said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and split wood for the burnt offering, arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw a place far off. And Abraham said to him, said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, that the lad I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. There's a lot of neat things just right here in this little passage here, is that he obeys again. He looks like he quickly responds. He obeys again. We say he rose early. He gets the burnt offering ready. And there's a lot of tie-ins there with the burnt offering and with the sacrifice in the Old Testament and Christ being sacrificed on a tree. And then we have the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes. The third day, there's a parallel that Christ was lifted up on the third day as well. Here's where Abraham, it seems like he has a little bit of an insight because he says he's going to go worship. He doesn't tell his men he's going to go sacrifice Isaac. Boy, they would have had a lot of questions for him. You're going to do what? You know, why would you do that? Isn't that forbidden to do that? I mean, it would have ran into all kinds of things. So he answers them, says, I don't know if he to me, I think he's got more insight rather than him trying to play with it and just not, his human side coming out. But I think it's more, I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt that he really said, hey, I'm going to go worship God. Because it is an act of worship what he's doing in his heart. And Moriah, that's a place where Solomon's temple was actually built. They actually feel that's the same ridge that Christ was crucified on. There's people who actually say it was the exact same spot, but we don't know if it's the exact same spot. You know, who knows? But who knows if our God was that finite and actually did that? There's a lot of neat parallels here. Pretty amazing when you think this passage. So that's why I said we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg. I can't tell you a lot of it. I just want to pull out some of the precepts here. But can you imagine that, being told to go take your son and go sacrifice him? Boy, I couldn't handle that. And that can be a real hard thing. It can be hard for people hearing that today. And so, but yet, that's the reason why. God said it's a hard thing. It was a hard thing. He had to trust by faith and do. Can you do the hard thing? Is really what God's asking him. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And this is just while they're traveling. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, son. And he goes on down and says, where's the lamb? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb. That's not just an accident, I don't believe there. That's where I said, I think Abraham here has a little bit of extra insight. Because what we see, Isaac doesn't see it. Abraham doesn't know how. Abraham knows he's been promised it's going to come through Isaac, the nations. But why would he tell me? So I think in his mind that he's really going to raise him back up again. Abraham believes that the Lord is going to raise him back up again. And so that's why he continues to follow through with it. And he says, then they came to the place and Abraham built an altar and placed the wood in order. He bound Isaac, his son, laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And pretty exciting to think about it. But man, it just seems like he took him right up to the edge. And then it's almost like taking you right up to the edge in a movie, and then the movie gets turned off or something. You know, it's like it's right at the edge and right at the climax, and he's fallen through. And Abraham must have had the faith to say that he knew that God had a greater plan. And that's where I come to, the greater plan. God did have a greater plan. We've seen the human side of Abraham here on some different occasions, but we also see, the godly side or the obedient side. And I even think in this chapter here, Abraham was doing the right things. Even though he said worship, I don't think he was telling that just to tell him, hey, I'm going to worship. Because in his heart, that's what he was doing, is go to worship. And he knew it was a lamb. It's not just the instant that he was saying a lamb. I think that's a prophecy of who? Well, he says lamb. What did John the Baptist say when he presented Jesus Christ? Behold, the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, right? And so here we see on the other side of the mountain, though, Abraham does not know the plan, but God does. And he's got a ram tied up in the thicket. And so I think that sometimes that's the parallel that I want to pull out. And he goes on again and he reiterates the covenant to Abraham again. And this brings us to now. I want to show you some slides. I want to pull out some things that just from the mission field and I just wanted to bring this up. And he called that God will provide. Boy, isn't that a great thing that the Lord will provide is the name of the place. Whoops, let me go back. That's okay. This is where Indonesia, and I'm going to share about this in just a little bit. But the parallels I want to bring out is he had the insight that angels were talking to him. When we're missionaries and we go over, there's been a lot of challenges. You got it planned out. You think you're going to go at a certain time frame. I even remember back when they told us, hey, you're going to leave and you're going to hopefully we can get you there before 10 years. Well, it took us a long time to get there. And I can remember we went off to Bible school and we were going to go off to linguistic school. But at Bible school, in our second phase of training, which we call the boot camp training or our missionary training, our second phase, we were in Wisconsin. And we had a daughter to graduate, took a little longer. I ended up getting a tumor on my pancreas and had a major operation. We didn't even know if we were going to go to the field. So we thought, wow. Where's God's plan? He brought us all the way to here, but I guess he's got a greater plan. Well, here I am today, and we end up going to the field, and I end up hiking all through the jungles. I'm going to show you some pictures of that. But God brought us up to some struggles, and we thought we were going to go to the field and thought we were going to be in a tribe. But because we weren't able to go to a tribe, because of some conflicts that we had between other church organizations, others that claim they own the territory, in a sense. And we end up meeting with the government and other organizations. The government says, you have no rights. You can't do that. But there was always kind of this gentleman's agreement in Irian Jaya that you just don't run into somebody else's territory and start working their territory. We were heading into a place where cannibals had been. I'd been in and visited them several times. They were open to us. They were already clearing out a spot for us to come. And yet the church organizations couldn't get it together. And so we had to come out and we started surveying. We started going to other parts of the country. I'm going to show you that in a minute. And then we ended up, there was just a lot of challenges that we ran into that we thought we might have. And through that, the Lord allowed us to end up starting another nonprofit organization just so we could to raise up nationals. And that was about 13 years ago. And so you're going to hear some of this and just hear a few challenges that we had. And here's Indonesia. You want to know where Indonesia is? It's all those islands. It's the world's largest archipelago in the world, over 15,000 islands, about 17,000 in low tide and high tide. It's something like 13,000. There's only something like around 7,000 inhabitable islands. It's all those islands there. And that far left side would be where the tsunami took place, and I'll talk about that in a bit. But Irian Jaya is there. We call that the bird's head. Whoops. And this is how big it is compared to the United States. I think you saw that already. And this is present day. That just kind of shows you the map. All those different colors on that map are language groups. Over 250 language groups in Irian Jaya alone, just that part with the bird's head. The rest of that's all Indonesia. Now, we didn't even see it. This is another challenge we didn't see. About 8 years ago, I was called up. And called up by another of the mission organization and said, hey, we are being kicked out of the country. And by us, have already had formed a nonprofit organization. It was a nationwide nonprofit that we were able to establish and get recognition from the government to be able, we could go anywhere in the whole country. And it's a very difficult country. We waited 2 years. That was another struggle we had before we even left. We waited 2 years to get our visas before we could ever go over there. And some people remember, like Ben, I helped him build the office during that time, right? And I was Ben's gopher building the office out here. And so, but that was a fun time too. So anyway, these are some missionaries. They called us up and said, hey, can you sponsor some of our missionaries? I said, how many are you talking about? And they said, can you take 20? I said, we can't handle 20. I said, we can maybe do 5 initially. Well, we started out with 5. Now we're up to 20, what is it today, 22? It goes up and down because of attrition rate. But we're around about 22 right now of missionaries, and there's just a lot of neat things going on through all these missionaries. And so we're able to sponsor these missionaries. Some we've had more active involvement in their lives than others. Some have had more active involvement in our lives than some of the others. But there's a lot of neat works going on, a lot of neat things going on over there. And This is what Diane and I look like when back in 1998 when we headed to the mission field. And this is our language helper. This is the first thing you do, you get to the field, you start learning languages. That's a challenge in itself. And that's Eddie. He was our language helper. He was a very new believer. You can see Eddie. Eddie is now our director, and he's really taking the reins. We've had a relationship with Eddie and Riyama for, 25 years now? About 20 years, something like that. Since 1988, almost 20 years. And so Eddie's fiance at the time moved in with us. She had some challenges and struggles, and she became Diane's language helper and Kelly's. He really didn't know. He was a very new believer. Riyama was a stronger believer and knew a lot more and was a fairly recent believer herself. And I can remember preparing messages with Eddie, and it was a good time where I could be mentoring Eddie and, in a sense, discipling him, going through a message, and I didn't know the language. And I remember a church, I was only there for about two months, and a church was already asking me to speak. And I said, I can't speak. And they said, well, just mix it up. Speak English, speak Indonesian. So Eddie and I sat for about 2 weeks, and we just put it all out. And they said, just read it, whatever. They just wanted me to come. So we went, and I did read it. I couldn't hardly get off the track. But it was a great time of preparing that message with Eddie and going through it and just discussing some of the doctrinal issues in that passage as well. So it was a great time. And so it's been a real blessing to be able to see. And I remember another missionary told me, and there's his wife, Riyama, that moved in with us. And then we later helped them get married. And you'll see more about it. Here's some of the struggles we ran into. I was talking about their struggles. You don't know God's plans. We had there was a lot of uprisings. There was times that they would tell us to just stay in our house and you can't come out all day long. You can't come out. There was 1 week. It was a whole week because there was a lot of revolutionary talk taking place where we lived at the time. And so this is a protest that was taking place. It was actually illegal to fly that flag. And so they're parading it right down the street. Another missionary, she snuck out and went and got the picture. And she gave me that picture. And so that just kind of gives you some of the ideas of some of the things that we worked under. Remember, this is the world's largest Islamic country nation in the world. People don't realize that. Every time we go over, we see more and more. This is back in about 98, really, and we didn't see a lot. We didn't see as many with the full jilbabs and the full hoods we're seeing more and more. We even seen tribal people today as we go back. When we go fly through cities, we see the full garb that they have. We're seeing more and more and more of it all the time. And so it's Indonesia is always being pressured. They're always getting funding from the Mideast countries. They're being pressured because they don't like Indonesia being a moderate Islamic country. And that's what they've always been coming. They kind of, it's almost resentments from the Middle East Islamic countries that they're the largest one in the world. Soon after this is probably about 10 months after we started doing language study, with all those islands, the number one thing you're doing is you're traveling all the time in Indonesia. That's another challenge. You're always challenged with the cost, expenses, the time, the effort. And here's a ship, and we took a sail around the island at that time with Eddie and Riyama, our language and culture people, and we got over to a tribe, and it was funny, they had more culture shock than we did because we'd study a lot about it, but they'd never been in such a remote area where we went, and it was just neat, and that was one of our first experiences. Then soon after that, for another missionary, we started surveying a lot of what we called surveying and exploring a lot of the islands so we could bring more missionaries over. And it's a very mountainous area. Brian's flown over this. This could probably be from an MAF plane. It probably is that we took that picture from. And it's going over the mountain range to what we call the flat swamp areas. And guess what? We decided to help out a challenge that we never knew that God had in his plan, but we were asked by another mission if we'd come help them out because they had two single women and all their men had to move out of the, for different reasons, had to go home. And they said, can you guys come down here? And would you guys be willing to live here and launch your ministries and do your surveys and just so you can give some male support to the women that are down here in Sengo? And so that's what we did. So God had a different plan for us. So we went to the swamp area. And that's what it looks like. And that's a runway there. And actually flew in some pretty decent-sized planes. Even one of the MAF's biggest plane would fly in there. And we took several flights. That's what it looked like in one of the villages. They had two villages there, which makes it very hard and difficult when you have two different tribes and two different villages all in one location. And plus you have a mission organization there. And it became almost like a city there out in the middle of the jungle, literally. And so their sustenance comes from living on rivers and fishing. And they to get transportation to their, what they call their dusuns, where they can go get what this, they call this sago. They get the papeda, they call it, and they turn it in. It looks almost like a glue. It's a real high starchy food, and that's, it's a lot of hard work, and that's what they're doing there. And I had to throw some pictures in the kids because it's always neat seeing kids' pictures everywhere around the world. A lot the same, except I don't see too many of our kids at 3, 4, and 5 years old playing with machetes. But you'll see that all the time over there. And opportunities for discipleship, it was always a great challenge. We had that was at Sengo, being able to do Bible studies, and they had a small church there, both in both language groups. They had some Christians there, and so it was interesting where I could lead some of the church. I put this in. This is one of the MAF trips, I think, of MAF, hauling Diana out or hauling her in, and she had malaria. She's had it about 10 times. That was one of the great challenges that we didn't foresee. I had it a couple times, and I can remember that one. I think we actually were going back, and she was just recovering, and we were going back to the tribe. But there was one time I remember Brent Palmer. He's out here now in Nampa. He pulled my wife out totally sick one day on a Sunday, and bless his heart, he came out on a Sunday afternoon when he usually didn't fly on Sunday, and picked her up. I mean, she was really, really bad. And I remember another time, I don't know if it's the same time, in this house. This is a house that Dr. Dresser had that we had. He served on the field for 30 years. So we had this is the biggest house we ever lived in. We were always in small houses. We didn't live like this. And that's one thing, it's a challenge. You live in a big house, you're going to have a greater challenge to reach the people. You live in a smaller house, you're going to have a less of a challenge. So you don't want to put cultural things that are going to block you, but you want to live comfortable enough that you can stay there because you do get culture shock. You do have, you experience it in different ways. So those are challenges you have on the field too. I remember one time that Diana was just totally, totally sick and out of her head. I was scared to death. And I had to go get an Indonesian doctor, and I can't remember. I think we ended up nursing her. For some reason, we couldn't get her out for several days, and we got through it. But, I mean, she was out of her head, crazy. And I'm not kidding you. It was bad, man, and I felt totally alone, I remember. But you draw upon the Lord during those times. And we were living off of solar panels. We had some nationals help me. We always had nationals. We had nationals living with us. We had Aka, Hiskia. We had Abner. We always had people living with us. And now I want to put a promo for next week. This is what kind of looks like my story. I can't give away the whole story. But when we were also surveying. We went around surveying, flying out different places and traveling. And I hiked a lot of jungles. I got a lot of stories about being out in the jungles. I'm going to share one next week or a couple. And I call it the faith story. These guys were actually cannibals. That guy there was the chief of the village. About a year after I'd been in there several times and hadn't come back, they had started clearing an airstrip, and they decided he hiked all the way down, I mean, a long ways, to Marauke. You know where Marauke is. And he started pleading with the government why they wouldn't let us come back in. But yet we had church conflicts that wouldn't let us back in, which is a sad thing. So these are the conflicts when you're a missionary that you don't understand, that you'll run into, that how can I not go in there when the people are wanting me to come in with the gospel? And so these are some people. That was a dear friend of mine, Epius. And he told me a lot of stories, told me a lot of horror stories about when the government came in and took over their island. And I just can't tell you all the stories that he told me. This is Ray and I and another national. We went hiking. I think we went, that's pretty close to an alligator swamp, but we had to hike over to, a crocodile swamp we had to go over. And this is just another survey. This is probably a South Coast survey because of the water, I can tell. And this is just another survey in the mountains and different places. And we always picked up people. We always went into villages. And that was great. Some great times, great experiences. There's a very clean village. Some of you probably get out. I remember the first time we went to this village, it was one of our second trips going somewhere. I think we had culture shock when we were there. And I look at this today, and it looks very clean to me. But boy, we had culture shock. Diana spilled a whole plate of fish on her that day. Had to walk all the way around. And this is Hiskia. He has a phenomenal story of how he saw his dad in a closet. And I could never deny it, but it was what drew him to the gospel, and he decided to accept the Lord. It was just a phenomenal story. And we're eating some papeda there, and he actually lived with us. This is just some plane trips. I couldn't leave the planes out, especially when I got Brian Shepson in here, and there's their float plane down on the bottom left. It's an MAF float plane that they flew us in when we were hiking, and that was we're actually trying to help that girl locate her, and we're on the one up above trying to help locate her into a village at the time. And so we were asked to help her out. And then here's the float plane. Here's a dear friend of ours, some friends of ours, Lisa and his wife, Shuarni. They were slated to go to an interior tribe with this. And about 2 years after this photo here, he passed away and went on to the Lord. So you just never know what's going to take place on the mission field. Here's part of that story, a promo for next week. This is kind of what it looks like. These guys are actually very, very remote cannibals that we slept with and were on the side of a river with. And it was getting very remote. Our motor broke down up in the top left corner, and that's kind of how they live in some of those houses up in the air. So here's another one. You can see the village. This was a very long hike. These are some of the people that were along it. We went into like 3-4 different tribes at the time on this survey. Mark had gotten infected toe, which always things happen. You get infected toe, and we had to call a helicopter in to get us because there was no way to get a plane in to us. We had a whole hike plan to hike over these mountains, which would have been pretty treacherous. And so we missed out on that. And it's not all bad. I put this slide in there. This was a very treacherous, very muddy, very steep. We had to push a Jeep out of mud up to our knees for a long, long drive. I can tell you millions of stories about this trip. There were so many things that happened on the trip. We had our gas stolen from us, and we barely found any gas to get back home. So it was just an amazing trip. But look at the beauty there you see. We come around this curve. It's very muddy. And look at this beauty on there that you see. I had to get that photo. And it reminds me, too, it's very adventurous being a missionary. I want to put that in there. I'm not trying to go. It's to me, I think if you like adventure, it's the greatest job in the world to get. And you'll love it. You'll be seeing the world. You'll be seeing everywhere. If you love people, you love adventure, you love challenges, you love risk, you love the risk to see how God will provide, you love living on the edge to see how God will provide, then, hey, I think God's got your name, and he's waiting for you. And so this is Eddie and Rama. We sent them off while we were doing the surveys. We sent them off to a missionary school so they could get some further training. And they graduated. We went over to school with them on another island. Later on, we saw them have two kids. This is their first kid. It's a cultural thing they do when they ask you to name your kids. They asked us to name both of their kids, which I found very different. So we named both their kids. This is Hannah here. We named her Hannah. And this is a little bit later, as they started maturing, that's their two kids, and Eddie, and it's about the time we decided to start a nonprofit organization, and you always have government details to work out with government officials, which is difficult in Indonesia, and pastors. Here we got pastors and government officials. We had Pak Abi soon after that join us, and he had been living out in all kinds of different tribes and ministering to people, and he's a pastor, and he later became a director of this missionary school, which we had an idea of. That's what was kind of on our plans, to be start to some discipleship schools. And here we was able to pick up Abi, and every time I'd go back over there, he'd always ask me to come and teach to his class. And then here's another challenge we had. You guys remember Aceh? Brian's talked about here in church. We had about 2004 and 5. There was great challenges over there for a number of years. And MAF still has the gal that came visit us. What's her name? Amber, still over there, ministering to these people. And this is what it looked like. These are our pictures. These aren't off the internet. We ended up getting funds, and we didn't expect to have funds, but we sent Eddie and a Papuan over there. And we ended up meeting up with some Muslim organization, actually, so we could make sure the food and the rice would actually get there, because some of the rice never made it to the people because of different reasons of people hiding tracks inside them so they wouldn't distribute them when they found them. This guy here is a very radical Muslim, probably, and he's that's a very radical area. We were working with him. This is their bed that Eddie slept on in a warehouse. This is very common in Indonesia. You just throw out what they call a tikar, just a real little thin, teeny, teeny, kind of like a reed type of bed, and that's your bed, and that's where Eddie and him slept, and you see some filters in the background. We sent a drill, and we bought a whole bunch of filters we sent over from the United States, and we started building water filters for them. And then the Lord moved us later to, smote me up to try to open up a mission training center up here. And we decided, and wherever you go, even remote, you find churches, you find mosques, and So those are the challenges you run into. You find opposition from some of the Muslims. We had some opposition there. And here's what the people look like there. Here's some teaching we were able to do there. It's chronological teaching. Here's some families that we lived with. Both these families went off to a mission training school and came back. And they came back and did some literacy programs and are still living out there in the culture. Jordy and Jan have met them. Jordy's over there. Jordy went out to this area. It's called SP Ceblas is what we call it, or SP11. And Lori was able to go with us, and Lori Price. And the dentist belled on her one day, and it was the most busiest day. The dentist had to bell because of an emergency and says, "You can do it." Lori's had some dental assistants and a dental hygienist. She got stuck with pulling teeth all day long, and that's kind of how the mission field is. You just never know when you got to improvise. And this is Jan and Diana, and this is before Jan became a nurse practitioner. And we went to this village, very interior, pretty close to Papuan border. Had this cabinet locked up full of medicines because nobody there to distribute it. So we went in there and unlocked it, and Jan started distributing medicines to the people, and we had just a long line of people for several hours there just distributing medicines and ministering to people. You just never know what you're going to get into when you're on the mission field. And we didn't know we were going to hike over to the Papuan border in sandals because we didn't take backpacks either. So with us in that happened. We got literacy programs going on over there and school programs going on. This is adult literacy, which plenty of opportunities for preaching. Is the interior opportunity for preaching, a Bible study interior there, and Diana teaching the kids. Now there's some current day stuff we have. We have some social programs. You're expecting Indonesia, and this is what opens up doors, both for the governments and both for the people. We're raising grass over there. One of our sponsored missionaries, we're raising grass and also water filters for them and give them mosquito nets. And it's for, because we have such a bad, there's a bad water erosion over there in the mountains. So you plant these trees and they can grow from very small to 6 months to be that size. And this is the government workers on one of those sites where it brought us great notoriety. You got to be careful you don't get too much notoriety, too high profile, or it causes problems. So, and then now it brings us to present day. We've been translating. We translated for our plans, thinking we're going to start a training center interior. God kind of botched that plan. We had some opposition from some people in the community, and things changed. So we've start translating some the whole theological thing, and it's just going great guns now, and really they're taking off with it. I had a vision that I would be over there helping with it. They don't need me now. It's kind of where we're at. I thought I'd be over there and be involved with it real heavy, but David here has got a big organization, and all the other and about 15 different Asian cultures, and between David and Eddie and Pac Franz and some people, it's just taken off. And so that's kind of the phase I got to get in on, the early days of it, of going out and teaching, doing workshops here just a few years ago. Eddie's now pastoring a church and doing the workshops, and we're also bringing up some other people just to be the director and oversee YMP3. And so it kind of brings us to a point now. This is a conference we had last year. We had over 50 people there. I think it was between 50 and 80, if you count the nationals and the missionaries and everybody involved. And so it was quite a thing. This is 13 years later, 12 years later. Last year we had a big conference. And that brings us to, that's an older picture of us on the field. And this brings us to Jimmy. And this guy's a Muslim. He's the assistant director of a theological school in Jakarta. And we're not sure where we're going to go here in the future. We may be, you always talk about a pullout plan. With our age and everything, of how do you phase out? The timing almost seems good. The government's getting real strong, really hard for us to get visas over there. They're even instituting some laws. You may have to be, if you're over 57 years old, you won't be able to stay there and get visas. And so they're really putting some stronger rules of how to minister over there. These are challenges we don't always see, but they're not bad. They're not that they can't be overcome all the time, but there's just been a lot of challenges lately with the government over there. So Diane and I are asking ourselves, we're at another phase. We've had all these different phases of not knowing what God's plans are going to be, and we're at that phase again now. Is this our time that we just kind of pull out and let them? And so I talked to Eddie back in May, Diane and I did. We thought this may be time for us to back out of YMP3 and do another ministry, another horizon. And he said, can you wait till August till we hear all the the laws that are taking place, and we're still hearing back even to this day what some of the laws and repercussions are going to be from August meetings in the government. So that's where we're at today. We're at a point where we're kind of at a phase-out stage. But Diana lately has challenged me, hey, how about we go help and start helping those guys over there at the theological school? They live right in the middle of the Muslims right in Jakarta. And so that's something we're toying with. I don't know if we'll get involved with that or not, but that's an idea. So just be praying for us. But the whole thing is, I'm not here to try to gloat on what we've done. It's just all been God. It's, the whole point is, there's a lot of new people here that don't know what we do. We've been praying for us. I appreciate all the prayers, Diane and I, over the years. There's been a lot of challenges over the years. A lot of challenges you don't see, but God does have the greater plan. And that's the whole point. And really to apply it out to all of us. We're all called to be ambassadors of Christ. We're all called to be ministers. It isn't going to be easy, whether it's in our here in Boise, Idaho, in ministry. Things are getting harder and harder all the time for us to be Christians, to shine our light. But look at Abraham. He was shining his light amongst believing in a monotheistic God into a whole world that was really polytheistic. And so that's what God calls us to be, is calls us out to be lights to the world and to shine. And so hopefully this is going to just be an encouragement of God has a greater plan. It is a challenge for us. It's simple for us. But we try to nudge him along sometimes in our own ways. And we've done it many times on the mission field, thinking we're helping God out. And we realize, hey, God doesn't need help. It's up to him and up to his plan. So let's go ahead and close today. And I just thank you for listening to me. Father, we just thank you for this day. Thank you for this time we can come together. And we just look to you. And thank you for all the number of years we could be involved in so many people's lives and ministries, and how we can be involved in people's lives and ministries here in the United States as well and around the world. And we just pray for you that you do have the greater plan. Just ask you to lead and guide and direct us to what you'd have us do in the future. We'd have Grace Bible Church in the future. There's someone here listening here today that thinks they'd want to be a missionary, that you just grab a hold of their heart. We just say amen to that and just pray that you would continue moving people to be challenged, to take the challenge. We're living in a time where there's been less missionaries going forward from the United States. And we just pray that more missionaries would go from the United States and become continue to let their light shine amongst the world and allowing you to call out a people for your name's sake and continue to build your church until you come again. In your name we pray. Amen.